continue our teaching series, I just wanted to again say thank you to the 95 volunteers that were here this past week, and just wanted to also say, because you guys volunteered, I mean, I know my wife, Zoe, she runs point on VBS every year, but there's no way she could do what she does, and by the way, she does an amazing job, but there's no way she could do what she does without you, and VBS couldn't happen without you. But here's the really cool thing, is that we know that we were able to serve and minister to 25 different family units that don't normally go to church, or if they do go to church, they might not be teaching the gospel there. And so this week, because you guys volunteered, they were able to hear at least 50 children. At least 50 children were able to hear the gospel and how much that God wants to have a relationship with them. And the other cool story that came out of here is that every year we do a penny offering, and there's a scale up here, and there's these big buckets on either side, and that's the girls versus the boys, and it's a lot of fun and a lot of competition, and it's who brings the most pennies in, and then the scale, you know, will go boys or girls or whatever. But the cool thing about that is not only does it get the kids involved, but it's their understanding of where those pennies are going. Half of those pennies are going to support our global partner, Sarah Hutchins, who's in Southeast Asia, and she serves 120 students over there, and this is going to enable her to be able to help supply them what they need. But on Thursday, one of the moms came in, and she's like, Rick, I got to tell you this. And she told me because of where the other half of the pennies are going. The other half of the pennies are going to Fostering Hope Rhode Island. A month ago, we had Jonathan Reed here, the executive director he spoke here. Well, he's actually upstairs right now in a meeting with our local outreach team and other folks who are interested in to understand how can we partner with Fostering Hope RI. But back to the story, the mom says, my little girl came home, and as she's explaining to me where these pennies are going, she's got tears coming down her eyes. And Rick, the reason why she's crying, it's because she's happy to understand that half of every penny that she's going to bring in here is going to help children just like her. It's where she was in foster care, but now this mom had adopted her and her siblings and brought them all into their house. This is a home that loves Jesus, and it meant a lot to this little girl that here, what she's a part of, that she doesn't even come to our church, but her understanding of where this money's going to go is to help children just like her. Isn't that awesome? So I think we should clap for that. And you guys make that all possible. So thanks for your partnership. So we're in this teaching series called The Pursuit. It's going through the minor prophets, and we've asked you, we've challenged you to read the minor prophets. Now, here's one thing that I did very bad last week. I didn't tell you what minor prophet to read, but we tried to send out emails. We put it out on our social media platforms to try and alert you to read through the book of Jonah. So as you read through the minor prophets, there is something that you need to have. There's a right perspective that we need to have as we read through this. And one of the perspectives that we need to have is that we need to understand that God pursues us from a heart of love because He desires a relationship with us. And so as you're reading these minor prophets, we need to understand that, as well as this filter or this perspective, is that God pursues us because He keeps His promises. He's a promise keeping God. And what's important to understand is that this is these minor prophets are writing to the people of God, or the people of Israel, and they had entered into a covenant with God hundreds of years ago, but they broke the covenant. But God is faithful to that covenant, and God is pursuing them. He's chasing them down because He's a faithful God, and He holds to His promises even when we break it. So we have to have that filter as we read through it. And that brings us to our minor prophet today, and that is Jonah. Now, we see the sovereignty of God in Jonah. We also see this idea of mercy in Jonah. And I want us to understand that mercy is much more than just a feeling or an emotion, that it is compassion and love that is expressed in tangible ways. And this morning, we're going to see that right here in the book of Jonah. There's something else that I want us to see in the book of Jonah this morning, and that is having the right beliefs isn't the point. Having the right beliefs isn't the point. It's living out those beliefs that changes things. Now, don't misquote me or don't think I'm saying something I'm not. What I'm not saying is it doesn't matter what you believe. I'm not saying that. Of course it matters what you believe. It matters that you believe that Jesus really is the Messiah, that He really was the Son of God. He left heaven, came to earth, died on the cross for our sins because our sin kept us separated from Him. And that He rose again. We just sang about that resurrecting power, right? That He gives that to us so that we can be restored into a right relationship with God when we put our faith and trust in Jesus. So believing the right thing is very important, but that's not the point. It's not so you can check it off and say, oh, I believe that and I believe that. What happens is it's about believing those things that it would bring transformation from the inside out in you. And because when it does that, it changes the way that you live. That's the point. And that's what we see here in Jonah. And as we jump into this minor prophet, something else to keep in mind is that this one is different than the others in that it's much more narrative about his story more than what he is to proclaim or what he is prophesying about the children of God or the children of Israel. So we'll jump right into the story. It starts right off the bat with this in verses 1 and 2. So if you have your Bible, I hope that you'll go and turn to Jonah chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible, we have free Bibles here. You can pick them up in the Welcome Center, and we'd be glad to have you. Or on your phone, you can download the free app. I love it. It's on my Bible's on my phone, and you can do the YouVersion app. It's free, and there's all kinds of really cool stuff that comes with that. But I hope that somewhere you'll turn there. If for some reason you don't have a Bible, it's Jonah chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. The Lord gave this message to Jonah, the son of Amittai, get up and go to the great city of Nineveh, announce my judgment against it, because I have seen how wicked its people are. So, right away we've got the directive. Noah has his calling. Noah knows exactly what he's supposed to do, and he's supposed to go to this city, Nineveh. We've talked about this in the other minor prophets, that the other minor prophets had said, hey, if you don't change your mind, don't change your heart, if you don't repent, if you don't do a 180, a judgment's going to come, and how's it going to come is from other people coming in, and they are going to carry us away into captivity. And one people group that was is the Assyrians. And guess where Nineveh is? It's the heart of Assyria. It's the capital of Assyria. And so these are the people, Jonah, that I want you to go and proclaim my judgment against them, because they are wicked people. You should see how they're in their mind, they're are no rules to war, all right? And the way that they treat their captives, it's just awful. So that's his job. Notice his response. It's, but Jonah got up and he went in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord. He went down to the port of Joppa, where he found a ship leaving Tarshish. Just for the visual, approximately, I mean, this isn't like if X was on the spot, you could use this for a treasure map or anything like that. But just to give you a visual, so, you know, we'll say this is where Jonah is from. Let's pretend he's there. He gets this message, and he's supposed to go to Nineveh, which is about 550 miles away. Instead, the story tells us he goes to Joppa. And there in Joppa, he gets on a ship, and he tries to go to Tarshish, which is 2,500 miles away, all the way around to like Spain. Visualize Spain in your mind. That's like where Tarshish is. That's where he's trying to head, 2,500 miles in the opposite direction of the direction that God has called him to go into. Now, we just can't go over that verse about this idea of Jonah going in the opposite direction without asking this question. How many of us in this room today are headed in the opposite direction in what God is calling you to? I mean, just stop and think about my life. Stop and think about your life. Stop and ask yourself the question, am I headed in the opposite direction of what God is calling for me in my life? First, on the salvation side, first on the state of your soul, first asking the question, you maybe have been to a church that teaches the Bible, and you've been there 100 times, or maybe you go to one, maybe you come here, and you come here year after year even, and yet you have not went in the direction of God. You have not yet surrendered your life, and you have not yet said, God, you are the God of my salvation. You just have not put your faith in Jesus Christ and what he did on the cross. That means you're heading in the opposite direction of what he's calling you to, because he's calling you to Jesus. He's calling you into a relationship, and you're heading the opposite direction. Now, many of you have made that commitment. Many of you do believe, and you have faith in what Jesus did, and you have you are restored in your relationship with God. But God is calling you to do something, and you are headed in the opposite direction. The story goes on because he gets on the boat in Joppa. And when he gets there, God brings this storm, like a storm like never seen before. And in verse 5, fearing for their lives, the desperate sailors shouted to their gods. Now, here he gets on this ship, and it's filled with people who have this polytheistic idea that it doesn't matter what God you believe in any God, and that's who these guys are. But notice, these are people who do this for a living. This was their job, to go from one port to another port, and yet they were fearing for their lives, right? And then they shout out to their God, and so they're not hearing any answers. So what they do is start chucking their livelihood off the side. They're trying to lighten the load, and they start throwing cargo overboard to lighten the ship. But all this time, where do we find Jonah? He's sound asleep. You know, sometimes when we run in the opposite direction of God, we try to pretend like everything's okay. We just try to go through the motions. We try to pretend like, oh, there's nothing wrong. There is a storm raging. There's a storm raging. And yet, you're acting as though there's nothing happening. I just wonder what God's trying to say to you this morning. As the story goes on, it says, here's what the captain does. The captain of the ship, he goes down after him, and he says, how can you sleep at a time like this? He shouted. Get up and pray to your God. Maybe he will pay attention to us and spare our lives. Isn't it? I mean, this captain has tried all these different gods, and then he goes down there, finds Jonah. Hey, you know, you must have a different type of God. Pray to your God. Let's see what he's going to do. And then in verse 7, it says, then the crew cast lots to see which of them had offended the gods. Again, this mindset, this polytheistic idea that there are many gods, and it caused the terrible storm. And when they did this, the lots identified Jonah as the culprit. Can you imagine sitting there? Can you imagine, like, and then all of a sudden the eyes are on you? Oh my goodness. And then here's what happens in verse 8. Why has this awful storm come down on us? They demanded. And then, teenagers, you can relate to this. College kids, you know, you come home late and your parents are like, where have you been? Who were you with? And blah, you know, this is what's happening here, right? It's like, who are you? What is your line of work? What country are you from? What is your nationality? And the answer blows us away. Jonah answered, I am a Hebrew. Right there, that just says, there's a lot packaged in that phrase, I am a Hebrew, because everybody knew about the God of the Hebrews. Everybody remembers hearing the history behind them being in Egypt, and then the God of the Hebrews brought terrible plagues upon the Egyptians, until that Pharaoh would let this 1 million+ people go. And then they remember hearing the stories about this Hebrew God who dried up one river after another river to let this 1 million+ people go across on dry ground. And they had heard about this Hebrew God who, when they walked around a city, and 7 times on that last day the walls come tumbling down, they knew about that Hebrew God. But notice what Jonah says. He says, I worship the Lord Yahweh. I worship that God. I worship this God. the God of the heaven, who made the sea and the land. Jonah is trying to tell him, here's what I believe. I believe that I worship the God who created this storm that's happening right now. I believe that. But his beliefs aren't matching up with what the way that he's living out his life. This idea of Yahweh in Hebrew, they don't have vowels, but that's how it would be spelt in the Hebrew. This carries with it such an awesome holiness about it. And it comes from the time, this very word comes from the foundation of when Moses and God met Moses at the burning bush. And Moses says, well, God, who do I tell him sent me? Who do I tell Pharaoh who sent me? And, you know, we get the reply back is, tell him I am. I am. And it, with that, that means that this is a self-existent God, that it's a self-sufficient God, that this God, this Hebrew God, has no beginning and has no end, that he doesn't need anything. Remember, in a polytheistic mindset, many of their gods were created out of chaos. And here's a God who says, I have always been and I always will be. That's the God that I serve. And that's who Jonah is saying, to telling these sailors that he's from. And then their response is, the sailors were terrified when they heard this, for he had already told them he was running away from the Lord. And then notice this, they're like, oh, why did you do it? Why did you run away from God? Why are you headed in the opposite direction? Do you know the choices that you make don't just affect you? It affects other people. High school kids, I know you get your license. And I know that you go out and, you know, you get that feeling of being an adult. Because I did it. I did it, man. I know what it's like. And man, you are like big man on campus. Remember, especially if you're the first one to get your license in your peer group, you know, in your circle of influence, yeah, everybody wants to be with you, right? I happen to live, God knew I needed to do this, I happen to live in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the time when I was 14 and 6 months when you could get your driver's license, and God knew that I needed to do that, right? So I get my license, and then we move back to Indiana. And in Indiana, you know, you got to be 16. And here I come back. I'm 15, and I'm cruising around in my car. And all my friends are like, what are you doing? I got a driver's license. Whoop. And I drove around Indiana with my Albuquerque, New Mexico driver's license forever. It was like, cool. But you know what? I made some foolish decisions that affected the friends around me. And I wonder, in your running the opposite direction of God, that you are making decisions that are affecting the people around you. Then it goes on to say, and since the storm was getting worse all the time, they asked him, what should we do to stop this storm? So that these sailors are going to Jonah and saying, what do we do to stop the storm? How do we make it stop? And this was Jonah's noble reply. Throw me into the sea, Jonah said, and it will become calm again. I know that this terrible storm is all my fault. At first pass, it seems like a noble gesture. At first pass, it seems like Jonah is like, you know what? Just throw me into the sea and it will all be over. But that was really Jonah just wanting to give up. Jonah would have rather given up instead of surrendered it up. Jonah would have rather given in instead of surrendering it up. Because he would have rather died than follow through with what God was calling him to do. Have you ever felt like you're at the end of your rope? You know, you've got this storm of life raging in on you, and you are like, I just give up. You would rather give up than surrender it up. But God is trying to have mercy, and He's trying to extend mercy to you. And He's like, no, I don't want you to give up. I just want you to surrender to Me. Will you surrender to Me? In verse 13, look at God's mercy here. Instead, the sailors rowed even harder to get the ship to the land, but the stormy sea was too violent for them, and they couldn't make it. But notice their first response. These polytheistic sailors, they want to row harder. Because Jonah's like, just throw me overboard. It will end it all. And the sailors are like, we're going to have mercy on you. We're going to save you. And they just dig in harder. And they're rowing hard. They're trying to get to the land. But God's like, no, you're not going to get there. You can row as hard as you want, man. It's not happening. This is God trying to use people who don't even believe in Him to show mercy upon somebody who says they do believe in Him, but is living a different way. And then the story goes on to say, they cried out, these sailors. And notice who they cried. I love this. They cried out to Yahweh. They cried out to Yahweh. They cried out to Jonah's God. And they said, oh Lord, they pleaded, don't make us die for this man's sin. You know, notice what they're like, hey, don't let their consequences, don't let the choices that he made affect us. That's their prayer. But don't hold us responsible either, because we're throwing him overboard. You know, that's basically what he's saying here. So they're ready. They want to throw him overboard, and they're like, God, Yahweh. Notice each time they reference them, they are referencing Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, because they understand that that Yahweh is larger than their little gods that they were worshiping. And then the sailors pick Jonah up, and they threw him into the raging sea, and the storm stopped at once. Can't you just see it? Can't you see Jonah landing, breaking the plane of the water, and poof, calmness. Calmness just comes over that. The effect of that is the sailors were awestruck by the Lord's great power, Yahweh's great power, and they offered him a sacrifice, and they vowed to serve Yahweh. God can even use your life circumstance and where He's trying to show mercy to you, He can even use that to bring other people to Him. And that's what He does here. He shows them who He really is, and then they make this vow to serve Him. Now, this next verse is hard to swallow sometimes, but here we go. And no pun intended on that one. Now, I really didn't mean that. Now the Lord had arranged for a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. Now this, stop and think about this. I know that in a lot of people's mind, there's a lot of pushback on this. There's like, Rick, it's stories like this is why I can't believe. It's stories like this that it's just like, come on, really? A fish swallowed this guy whole and he lived in his belly for 3 days and three nights? I don't know. Number one, this isn't the point of the story. The point of the story isn't getting swallowed by a fish. Number two, if you do some research, you will find some documented cases where they say scientifically that it can happen. And then you'll find other cases that all kinds of holes have been poked into, some of them more than others, but where, you know, people say, oh, I was swallowed by, you know, this large whatever, and I was in there for a day or whatever. So, but, let me just ask you a question. What if you had your best friend who happened to be a believer? You're not. But your friend is. And your friend comes to you and tells you that they have just been diagnosed with cancer. And it's stage four. It's not looking good. In fact, the doctors are like, you've got months to live. And then your friend tells you, but I'm praying. I've got my church praying. I'm in a part of a small group. My small group is praying. And we're just praying God's will. We're praying God's will. And you feel bad. You don't believe, but you feel bad for your friend. But then, 4 months out, Your friend comes back to you. And your friend tells you, you won't believe it. I just came back from the doctors and they did a scan and they can't find any cancer. It's amazing. I mean, God did something. God heard our prayers. And you rejoice with that person. And that person is still in your life. They're still living. And in your mind, there's no doubt. There's like, wow, that was like a miracle. I mean, I could tell you my own personal miracle stories. I could tell you there was one time my son was traveling down on 295. And he was involved in an accident that was a rollover, not just roll left to right, but they also went end for end and ended up in the ditch. Their Nissan Xterra that they were in was like as flat as a pancake. One of the first responders there happened to know Zoe because his kids went to Buttonwoods. And he, when we got into contact with them, or he got in contact with her, he was just like, there's no way anybody should be walking away from that accident. When I met the first responders at the ER at Hasbro, that was their first thing. Is this your son? I said, yeah. They said, there's no way he should be walking away from this. And he walked away essentially just bruises and banged up. That's a God can do that. I'm in high school. I'm leaving Newport. We lived in Jamestown at this point, and I'm on my motorcycle. It's late at night. There's no one around. We had just closed, you know, the restaurant, and so now I'm headed home. And because high school kids do stupid stuff, I'm like, how, you know, I wonder how fast I can take this curve and get on to the Newport Bridge. And that's what I'm doing, man. I go into the curve and I'm like, wah! And all of a sudden ahead of me, I see a patch of gravel. And if you know, and yeah, some of you know, you see gravel and bikes, and when you're trying to lean into the curve, they don't mix. And I got paralyzed. I was literally paralyzed. I could not pull myself to lean into that because I know what would happen if I leaned into that. And so now I'm waiting for impact. And I'm leaning a tiny bit, but I am waiting for the impact because I see the curb coming. In fact, I got so close to the curb, I remember looking down and I thought, and all of a sudden it was just like somebody picked my bike up, put it back down. I just kept on going. I didn't hit the guard. I didn't hit the railing there. I didn't smash into the curb. It was just like, just like that. I think that was God protecting me, picking my bike up, putting it back down. And you can believe that or not, or you could get hung up on a story like this and say it's not believable. But the point is that God does miracle type works all the time. And also, Jesus believed this story. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus referenced this story as though it was a true historical fact. So, the story goes on that in Jonah chapter 2, as he's swallowed in there, wherever he's at, you know, whatever swallows him, he's in the, you know, the ocean, underneath, about ready to go under. And chapter 2 is filled with the Psalms. This is Jonah just crying out, praying out to God, praying out from the Psalms. It shows us how important the Psalms are in the life of the Hebrew people, because that whole chapter 2 is full of that. And then, and verse number 9, here's his conclusion. Jonah says, I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I will fulfill my vows, his vow, his calling. He was called to be a prophet. He wasn't fulfilling it right now. Now he says, I'll fulfill my vows. And then he says, my salvation comes from the Lord. He knew the only way out of this was to surrender and not to give up. And I wonder where you're at this morning, because we serve a God of second chances. You just look at the first two verses of chapter 3. It says, and then the Lord spoke a second time. Isn't that a great part? That's a great part because that lets us know that Jesus is a God of second chances. And no matter where you are this morning, you have a second chance. And maybe you're here hearing for the umpteenth time the story of salvation. And on your connection card, if all of you would take out your connection card, that very first step is that I have heard the gospel before, but today, for the first time, I want to put my faith in Jesus Christ, the God of second chances. Don't, please hear me, don't wait, because we never know how many second chances that we get, and God is calling you to Him today. And if this is you, we want to pray for you, we want to celebrate with you, and we want to follow up with you. So would you put your name and your phone number on there so we can call you and just celebrate this step with you? Or maybe you find yourself in this step, and that is, even though I have put my faith in Jesus Christ, I have a hard time living it out. You find yourself a lot like Jonah. The sailors were astonished. What? You believe that, but the way you're living is this way. And I understand. It's not easy. I understand it's hard. But God, we just sang about there is victory in Jesus, right? In His name. You can do that, but maybe this is more you. God is calling me to take a specific action in my life. I've been running in the opposite direction. This morning, if you're running in the opposite direction, won't you come? Won't you just surrender? And God may be calling you to a specific action of something to do, or He may be calling you to stop doing something. Whatever it is, will you respond to the call of God? Let's pray. Jesus, we